gave these thinkers the confidence that the knowledge they attain through the world of the senses is to a certain degree reliable. I mean, we're fallible and we're limited in our knowledge, so we can make mistakes and draw false conclusions, but for the most part, God isn't some evil demon set out to deceive us through the world of the senses. Okay? So they had the confidence that even the ancient Greek scientists never had. It was always possible that the gods were messing with our heads. Christianity turned everything upside down, and all of a sudden, okay, now we can make sense of the world in which we live. Now, atheists have thrown out the foundation for modern science. They have thrown out the rational God. And my question is, what basis is there? Confidence. What guarantee do we have that our senses are not deceiving us? In fact, Immanuel Kant, even though he was a deist, by the way, if you ask atheists, you know, name the philosopher that refuted Christianity, they either remain silent or they give you a list of names of guys who believe that God existed. Immanuel Kant, David Hume, Benedict Spinoza, they didn't believe in the Christian God, but they were either deist or pantheist. They believed in, that some kind of God existed. And then if they turned to Darwin already rejected God's existence, and he was just making a few proposals that he hoped the evidence would vindicate his theories, but the evidence hasn't done that. Since the published Origin of Species, it hasn't been the case. But whatever the case, modern science was founded by Christians. Problem number two with evolution. Evolutionists used to argue, like Friedrich Nietzsche, who died in 1900, that we don't have to find a cause for the universe because the universe was always there. It never had a beginning. It always existed. Well, with the second law of thermodynamics, we know that the amount of energy in a closed system, the amount of usable energy in a closed system is running down, winding down. And so if the universe is all there is, by definition, it's a closed system. It can't take energy from the outside. There is no outside. So eventually, all this energy in the universe that's in a usable form is going to be used up. And eventually, the universe is going to die. Well, if it's going to die, if it's going to wind down, it had to be wound up. It had to have a beginning, at which time all the energy in the universe was in a usable state. That's the second law of thermodynamics. That is on very sound ground in scientific circles. No scientist, Christian or non-Christian, denies the second law of thermodynamics. The Big Bang model, on the other hand, is more controversial, although it's almost a universal consensus among atheists, although there are some atheists who reject it. But the Big Bang model has problems. There are things that we see that do not really make sense. You know, things don't cluster together, wouldn't cluster together to form galaxies. If it's an explosion, everything blows apart, and there's not going to be some things. There's numerous problems with the Big Bang model, but even if you just assume the Big Bang model was true, you say, well, let's just say, Mr. Atheist, that the Big Bang model is true. It shows that, you know, as the universe goes forward in time, it expands in all directions, like the effects of an explosion. As you go backwards in time, it gets smaller and smaller until eventually you reach a point of infinite density. Or scientists also say a point of dimensionless space. Well, something physical is infinitely dense, infinitely small, that means it's not there. Because if it's still something there, it could still get smaller. If it's a physical point that takes up no dimensions in space, it takes up no space. So those are just fancy ways of saying that the Big Bang model teaches that you go back far enough in time, there was no universe, and then boom, the universe exploded into existence. Totally out of nothing, totally without a cause. Now you might think, no atheist believes that. Well, just read Michael Martin, Boston University, one of America's leading atheists. He says that we should at least entertain that possibility, and even implies that we should hold to it, that the universe just popped into existence, totally out of nothing, totally without a cause. Quentin Smith, a professor from, I believe, Michigan State University, philosophy professor, he debated William Lane Craig, one of the evangelical leading evangelical philosopher. The debate was published as Theism, Atheism, and Big Bang Cosmology. On page 135 of that book, Quentin Smith states that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the universe popped into existence totally out of nothing, totally without a cause. the difference between atheism and Christianity today is that the Christian says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The atheist says, in the beginning, nothing created the heavens and the earth. Nothing is nothing, therefore nothing can do nothing, therefore nothing can cause nothing. If something came into existence, something else had to cause it to come into existence. But the beginning of the universe has been the biggest... The newspaper should have said, you know, in 1929, when Edwin Hubble saw the expansion of the universe, the report should have been atheism refuted. Instead, atheists act like, oh no, this, it's no problem that the universe had a beginning. We can still hold to our atheistic evolution, and it really does not make sense. Now let me say this too. Atheism used to mean, from two Greek words, a, meaning no, and theos, for God, so it means no God. Atheism used to mean the belief that there is no God. You will not find a thinking atheist today. Any professional philosopher who's an atheist calls himself an atheist. Michael Martin, in his, he talks about it too in our debate, but in his Atheism, a Philosophical Justification, he has an appendix where he explains why atheism should mean the lack of belief in God, because you don't see the evidence there, so a lack of belief in God rather than the belief there is no God. So he tries to make it so he has nothing to defend. I don't have a belief to defend. I'm a free thinker. I just lack the belief you have, so the burden of proof is on you. Well, two things. Number one, now atheism is a worldview. They build their whole view of reality on that. So I pit atheism against theism, and I tell them, don't bring in your pantheistic or polytheistic buddies. So when I use an argument for God's existence, you can't say, well, that could also prove polytheism. Well, if it could prove polytheism, if it proves either theism or polytheism, atheism still loses. So you can't bring your buddies and gang up on the Christian. Let's just go head to head. And when Christianity goes head to head with any other worldview, Christianity wins, period. Okay? Now, you might get an uninformed Christian debating a brilliant atheist, and he might lose. But when things are spelled out, Christianity will be able to go head-to-head with any worldview and then come out. When the smoke clears, only Christianity will be standing. They have redefined atheism so that it means historically what agnosticism meant, strong agnosticism, which is that man cannot know if God exists, or the evidence for God's existence is insufficient, so man should be skeptical or agnostic towards God's existence. So modern atheists, they have changed the name. Bertrand Russell was very honest in the 1940s when he debated Frederick Copleston to admit he's not an atheist, he's an agnostic. Today's atheists are not as honest. So they have lost so many debates, they redefined atheism as agnosticism. So they've actually left the atheist camp for the agnostic camp, and they didn't tell anybody about it, okay? So keep in mind now that if you get a real thinking atheist, he's not supposed to believe there definitely is no God. He's just supposed to lack belief in God because of the lack of evidence for God. If you find an atheist that is the traditional type atheist, it's probably because he just hasn't read enough atheist material to see that he needs to water down his quote-unquote dogmatism. First life, what we find in first life, the cell, the most basic unit of life, a single-celled animal contains enough genetic information, especially in the DNA, specified complexity, scientists call it, enough genetic information to fill an entire library with information, okay? You can't get that amount of information by chance. No matter how many explosions you have in a print shop, you're never going to produce accidentally a Webster's Dictionary, let alone an entire library's worth of information. The Big Bang supposedly produced all the order and complexity in the universe today, and I guess evolution's still moving forward, just we're not going to live a billion years to see it, so I guess it still continues to produce more order and more complexity as time goes on. That's not a scientific statement, to say the Big Bang explosion produced all the order and complexity in the universe, because every random explosion that scientists have ever examined, you know, forensic experts coming in and and investigating situations. It always takes things, explosions take things from a state of order and complexity to a state of disorder and chaos. Okay? The movement is never in the opposite direction. And so it is not a scientific statement to say the only thing that could possibly rescue the Big Bang would have to be a God guiding it. But once you posit the existence of God, I don't even think you need the Big Bang, but that's a whole other story. Yeah.
Well, you said that explosions take things from order to disorder, but in the case of the Big Bang, they're not taking things at all.
At first, there's nothing, and then there's a Big Bang, and so you have to ask where it came from. But then you still do, in the initial stage of the Big Bang, you end up having these things that just, with the Big Bang, just pop into existence. But yeah, that's a whole other problem. That's like when I was talking to some Buddhist students from Japan, and I asked them, how did everything get here? I believe God made everything. What do you believe made everything? And they said, the Big Bang. And I said, well, what made the Big Bang? They didn't know. They talked to each other in Japanese, and they said, "He's a miracle." And I said, "No, you can't have a miracle without God. Only God does miracles. If you got no God, you got no miracles." And I said, "What made everything?" And they said, "Nothing." And so I was in my classroom, and you could see the weight room from there. And I said, "I lift weights." You know, their English was very bad, so I had to. And I said, "I lift weights. I have the power to lift weights." And they said, "Oh, yeah, lift weights." I said, but I do not have the power to make everything. Nothing has no power to lift weights, but nothing has the power to make everything. And then they said they didn't want to talk anymore. But whatever the case, the order, the design in the universe, and then when you go from simple life forms to complex life forms, like the human brain is the most complex thing that we know of in the physical thing in the universe. Even when you look at the fossil record, species appear suddenly and fully developed. You don't find wings are evolving into arms or anything like that, to the point where the late Stephen Jay Gould, argued for a view called punctuated equilibrium and said, well, the reason why we have no undisputed fossils of transitional forms between major species is because they didn't exist long enough to be fossilized. So a lot of people call it the old hopeful monster theory, that the fossil record would make it look like two apes got together and had a baby boy, and enough baby boys and baby girls were born around the same time. The fossil record would make it look like that. Now, there was some transitional form in between there, but only lasted from 20,000 to 100,000 years, not long enough to be fossilized. That's like arguing for evolution on the basis that there is no evidence of evolution in the fossil record. Because he's arguing for evolution based on the absence of fossils of transitional forms. So he's arguing for transitional forms on the basis of there's no fossil record of it. That'd be like saying, that sounds like Dan Brown in the Da Vinci Code, that the original Christianity, the original writings of Christianity, we don't have the evidence for what they actually are because they've all been burned and destroyed. And a lot of these secret records that prove Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene and the other thing, most of that evidence has been destroyed. I mean, it's real easy to say, I've got a whole lot of evidence, but it's all been destroyed because there was a conspiracy of these evil Christian leaders and blah, blah, blah. So if you don't have evidence, you don't have evidence, period. We already talked about no transitional forms, the fossil records. You know, how could reptiles... The evidence for the transitional forms between reptiles and birds, we've never found them. They propose Archaeopteryx, and everybody agrees that's not the transitional form. There's no agreement as to the transitional form between apes and humans. And how can you go from fish gills to lungs? Whatever is in between isn't going to be able to exist either underwater or on land. You know, and when you go to from reptiles to birds, it's a totally different design for the lungs. So that for those lungs, one type to evolve into the other type, whatever the transitional form would not be able to breathe. And these were the things that Darwin said, if you could find these things, you will disprove my theory. But we found plenty of them. And the things he said, you have to find these other things to prove my theory. We haven't found those things. So now the sixth problem with evolution is this, that there's many unproven assumptions made by evolutionists, okay? That the universe is either the universe is eternal, most knowledgeable atheists now reject that, or the universe popped into existence from nothing totally without a cause. There's no evidence, there is no scientific evidence whatsoever that something, anything, even a little thing, could pop into existence totally out of nothing, totally without a cause, let alone the entire universe. In fact, it violates the traditional principle from non-being cannot produce being. From nothing, nothing comes. Nothing is nothing, therefore nothing can do nothing, therefore nothing can cause nothing. So there's no evidence for this whatsoever. It's just assumed, because they assume there's no God, and they just make this assumption that life could evolve from non-life without intelligent intervention. That is assumed. It's not proven. In fact, spontaneous generation has been disproven by people like Louis Pasteur. If you think the Miller-Urey experiments prove that life could evolve from non-life without intelligent intervention, well, number one, I'm assuming Miller and Urey were intelligent, and they certainly intervened in their lab things. They try to set the conditions right. That's number one. So even if it succeeded, it would just show that life could only come from non-life with intelligent intervention. Dr. Wickramasinghe, one of Great Britain's leading scientists and former evolutionist, he says it's cheating because they start with amino acids, the building blocks of life. They break them down and they recover them in the lab. So he says they're starting with what they want to end up with. They cheated. Norman Geisler says it's the building blocks of life. It's like a sentence or two rather than an entire library's worth of information, so that they haven't even come close to life. But when you bring Wickramasinghe in, yeah, they started with the sentences, they jumbled up the words, and then they got the sentences back. Jonathan Wells, he lives right in Polesbo, Washington, works for the Discovery Institute out of Seattle. His work, what is it, The Icons of Evolution, I believe? He devotes a whole chapter to this one where he just shoots it down. And they assume that you can get intelligence from non-intelligence, assuming that they acknowledge that scientists are intelligent. That multi-celled animals came from single-celled animals, there's no evidence for that. That vertebrate animals with backbones came from animals without backbones, invertebrate. And the common ancestry of fish, reptiles, birds, and mammals, you know, they go on that, they go with common anatomy. The arm seems to be similar, the arm of a man, the arm of a gorilla seems to be similar to the wing of a bird, to the fin of a shark. That's common anatomy. Everybody agrees about that. But common anatomy does not automatically mean common ancestry. It could mean common design. Like if you saw two Norman Rockwell paintings and you recognize common design, there must be a common designer. But whatever the case, if you had to sum up these points, these unproven assumptions with one word, that the universe popped into existence totally out of nothing, totally without a cause, that life evolved from non-life, intelligence came from non-intelligence, multi-celled animals came from single-celled animals, animals with vertebrae came from animals without vertebrae, and that fish, reptiles, birds, and mammals are all related and share common ancestry. If you had to sum that up in one word, the one word is evolution. But it's also, it violates scientific law time and time again. But the one word is evolution. In other words, evolutionists assume everything they're supposed to prove. If you're going to prove evolution, you have to prove these things happen. These are assumed to have happened, but they have never been proven to have happened. Let me say this. College science textbook, biology textbook, and it's stated, and I still have the textbook at home, it stated that the cell theory, scientists have found that all cells come from pre-existing cells. Cell is the basic unit of life. All cells came from pre-existing cells. No problem. That's what they've proven. But then they state, however, this does not apply to the first cell, the first living thing, which had to have evolved from non-living material. Now, they offer no evidence for that whatsoever, and they just violate what they have proven, but it just they assume there is no God, so there's no other place for it to come from. It must have come from non-living material. And by the way, if the whole universe could pop into existence out of nothing, totally without a cause, then why would living material have to come from non-living material? Maybe it just popped into existence out of nothing, totally without a cause. So you see, in the end, if evolution is just trying to stick to their guns apart from the evidence, eventually you're going to end up with nothing but superstition, which is what C.S. Lewis predicted in The Abolition of Man in the 1940s, that we're throwing God's moral laws out the window. Eventually, science, which attempts to control nature, eventually science will become superstition and magic, because magic tries to control nature as well, and the last aspect of nature to be controlled will be mankind. I've got a chapter in my book, God, Government, the Road to Tyranny, that deals with the death of Western civilization. It deals with C.S. Lewis, Francis Schaeffer's thought on that, as well as Friedrich Nietzsche, the German atheist. So, basically, evolution as a foundation, a scientific foundation for atheism, it really, in the end, when you break it down, it's the emperor has no clothes. Okay, so now let's talk about secular humanism. Secular humanism, basically, it started out as a religion. Now they claim it's not a religion, but even the Supreme Court refers to it as a religion, the 1961 Turcaso versus Watkins Supreme Court decision. But Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2, the first one was written in 1933 and signed by big guns like John Dewey. The second one was written in 1973. Paul Kurtz, a philosophy professor out of Buffalo, New York, edited it. I got to meet him at a major conference that he had, an atheist conference at University of North Carolina, the Chapel Hill campus. They asked me to be the token theist to defend God's existence in a debate there, so I got to meet Paul Kurtz. And that was in September of 1999, so he may have gotten some of the signatures. It was probably the biggest atheist conference since the 1970s, so I was very honored to represent Christianity there. But the Humanist Manifesto 2000, he was about to print this, and so he may have gotten some of the signatures. Some of the people who signed that attended that debate and that conference, so he may have, Michael Martin, I met him there, he signed it. I would think that Jeffrey Lauder was at the conference, but I don't see his name. But Jeffrey Lauder was the one who founded Internet Infidels, the world's largest atheist website, and I had the privilege of debating him there. But he came out with a Humanist Manifesto 2000, a call for a new planetary humanism, drafted by Paul Kurtz. So Paul Kurtz was from the same city as I am, both from North New Jersey, so we hit it off real well. I think I hold a record for hugging the most leading atheist in America. So we'll talk a little bit about the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2 in just a few minutes. But atheism believes there is no God. They deny creation. They either say the universe is eternal, very unpopular view among atheists today, or it popped into existence without a cause. So they hold the atheistic evolution. The Bible is merely a human book with errors. There's no salvation after death. We cease to exist. Jesus was merely a man. He's not God. He did not perform miracles. He is not Savior. Miracles are impossible. Man basically is the measure of all things, says the secular humanist. The highest being in the universe, an evolved animal. There's no such thing as sin. There's no universal absolute moral laws. Yet they write over and over again in their manifestos what they think we should do. So it's like there's no right and wrong. But if you sit down and ask them, what do you think is best for this world? They'll talk for 3 hours. Okay, in truth, there's no absolute universal truth. So, let's talk a little bit about the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2 and 2000. Prometheus Books, by the way, publishes them, probably the biggest atheist publishing house in America. Now, technically, you don't have to be an atheist to be a secular humanist. You have to believe that either God doesn't exist, or at least he doesn't intervene in the affairs of men, and that man's the ultimate value in the universe. So you could sign on board with the secular humanist and still be a deist, or even be some type of a pantheist. But in the end, the emphasis is on man saving the planet. But the Humanist Manifestos 1 and 2 refer to secular humanism as a religion. And by 1973, they call it a faith, but they don't use the word religion as much as they use in the first one, because now they're trying to get Christianity out of the public schools, and they're trying to claim secular humanism isn't religious in itself. Yeah, you can become an ordained secular humanist minister nowadays. Secular humanists believe in there is no God. By the way, you could just pick this up. You could probably order it at Barnes & Noble. I don't think they'd have it on the shelf. Just a very small book, and you could just read through it in a couple hours. And you'll see that they come right out and affirm their atheism, their belief in evolution. Their belief that socialism is the best form of government, that to solve poverty we need, you know, just trust the government officials, let them take more and more control. They argue that in Secular Humanist Manifesto number 2, that traditional religion is harmful. There's no evidence for the supernatural, no divine purpose for mankind, and they state, and I quote, only man can save this planet. Okay? So they're looking to man to save the planet Earth. They're not looking to some quote-unquote pie-in-the-sky dream that the Lord Jesus is going to return and rescue us. Heaven and hell are harmful illusions. So it does damage to anything. These are guys that don't believe in right and wrong, but it does damage to people. It's very harmful. Traditional religion is causing all the problems and all the evils in our world, even though there's no evil. They deny life after death. They believe traditional religions hinder human progress. And then they state that ethics is autonomous and situational. It says on page 17, Humanist Manifesto number 2, third, we affirm that moral values derive their source from human experience. Ethics is autonomous and situational, needing no theological or ideological sanction. Okay? Autonomous means that each individual decides for himself or herself what is right or what is wrong. Situational, the situation might help reveal to you what the best course of action is, but it's still autonomous. It's still you governing yourself. Now, on the very next page, page 18, so they're saying that each person decides what is right or what is wrong for them. It's about the individual. It says, sixth, in the area of sexuality, we believe that intolerant attitudes often cultivated by Orthodox religions and puritanical cultures unduly repress sexual conduct. The right to birth control, abortion, and divorce should be recognized. So here you have a world without God, but there's still rights. Look, in a world without God, there are no human rights, okay? While we do not approve of exploitive, denigrating forms of sexual expression, neither do we wish to prohibit by law or social sanction sexual behavior between consenting adults. Now, they don't say two consenting adults, because if there's 50 consenting adults that want to have sex together, more power to them, says the secular humanist. But I want us to think about that for 1 minute. Ethics is autonomous. Each individual decides what is right or what is wrong for themselves. Then they say we're for any forms of sexual expression between consenting adults. So they're saying we're against rape and we're against incest and pedophilia, sex with children. Now, I'm glad they're against those things, but they're borrowing capital from the Christian worldview. They just said each person decides what is right or what is wrong for himself, and now they're condemning the rapist. Okay? You can't have it both ways. All right? And so they contradict themselves right on the very next page. And so if ethics is autonomous, if morality is autonomous, then the rapist decides for himself what he's going to do. We'll talk about moral relativism a lot more later. They argue for rights to abortion, divorce, suicide, and euthanasia. People have a right to suicide. We've got to stop these police officers from infringing on people's rights when they convince people not to kill themselves. Now, I, as a Christian, believe the police officer is right to try to dissuade somebody from committing suicide. But if there's a right to suicide, who are we to infringe on people's rights? They believe in the freedom to pursue one's own sexual lifestyle so long as it's between consenting adults, which just throws the autonomous principle right out the window. They want to educate children in sexual freedom, which is the same as saying educating, from a Christian perspective, educating children in sexual immorality. And they say people are more important than rules. Well, I agree with that, but the Christian response is that the Bible's rules, God's rules, God made because those rules help people. So, you know, people are more important than rules. You're going for a drive with your friend in a car, and he's going 120 miles an hour, and you see the speed limit sign says 60. What do you say? Well, you know, people are more important than rules. No. I mean, well, people are more important than rules, but because of that, that 60 mile an hour speed limit rule is a good rule, and you tell your buddy, please slow down. They state that the state should not favor any particular religion, but they want atheistic evolution in their values taught, because they always claim atheistic evolution is scientific and creationism is not. It's superstition. So again, it's that arrogance. 1925, the Scopes trial, the first monkey trial, the ACLU argued it's wrong for only creation to be taught in the public schools. We need to teach creation and evolution. In the 1980s, the same ACLU was arguing it's wrong to teach both creation and evolution in the public schools. Creationism is religious, not scientific. Evolution is scientific. Only evolution should be taught. So they have no problem contradicting themselves, so long as their contradictions help move their ideology further, their agenda further. They want a world socialistic community, so they're fighting for a one world government. Here the secular humanists join arms with the New Agers. They want an end of war and reduce military spending, and then they want international courts. You see, with the International Criminal Court, now that they're getting a lot of their wishes, they want international courts to settle disputes. Now, the question comes up, can courts stop violence without military? They want a reduction in military forces, but if an international court makes a ruling, you know, they think man is basically good, and Osama bin Laden is going to say, oh, the international court said I can't do something, so I guess I won't do it. So, it goes without saying, they don't mention it, but these international courts are going to have an international police force to enforce their rulings. And if mankind has the capability of building nuclear weapons, then guess what? The international army is going to have to be powerful enough to put that kind of stuff down. So what they're calling for is basically a one-world socialistic government with enormous power, so much power that none of the nations on Earth will even want to mess with it. And that's their answer to find lasting peace on the planet Earth. They want to end poverty by redistributing wealth. That's communism. The redistribution of wealth. If you're working hard and making a lot of money, and I'm a lazy bum, and they give me half of your money just for being a lazy bum, eventually it discourages me from changing my lifestyle, and it encourages you to become a lazy bum. This is the scary thing about communism. Communism cannot endure without funding from capitalist countries. So, I mean, if they're going to pour all their money, it's non-productive. Communism is non-productive. People don't feel like being all that God called them to be when they can't reap the benefits of their hard work. So it's not very productive, and productivity is the key to prosperity. It makes you wonder, why do capitalist countries finance communist regimes to keep them afloat? Okay, and then they call for the toleration of all views except traditional religions. They keep slamming traditional religions for being intolerant. So it's like, we're the tolerant ones. As long as we label you intolerant, we could slam you with no problem at all, and we're the tolerant ones. So in the name of tolerance, the new tolerance becomes the most intolerant belief system known to man. Now, the problems with secular humanism, we'll deal with that when we refute atheism as a whole later on in our series of lectures. The result, though, of secular humanism is that because of it, Americans have felt such a void for the spiritual realm. And Jesus said in Matthew 4:4, man does not live on bread alone, but on every utterance of the mouth of God. Man is not just physical, he's also spiritual. And so we have this thirst for the supernatural. Still, Americans have accepted practical atheism. We've accepted humanistic moral values. We like human autonomy. So now Americans are speaking spiritual experiences and a God who won't judge us. And so Americans are falling for New Age pantheism. So basically, as I said, deism is a halfway house between Christianity and atheism. Atheism is also a stepping stone itself to New Age pantheism. Eventually you reject the existence of the God who has revealed himself in creation, Romans 1:18-22. Eventually you end up bowing down before statues of four-legged creatures. Western culture has moved from paganism to Christianity, you know, because of pagan Rome, to Christianity, to deism, then to secular humanism, and now all of a sudden we're moving back towards paganism.